Welcome to the Advances in Nutrition podcast. Today we are speaking with Dr. Naima Mustaid Musa from the University of Tennessee Institute of Agriculture about the review, N3 Fatty Acids Alleviate Adipose Tissue Inflammation and Insulin Resistance Mechanistic Insights, which is published in the July 2011 issue of Advances in Nutrition. What is adipose tissue inflammation and how is it related to insulin resistance in obesity?
Okay, I can take 2 days to answer this. So I'll start actually by defining insulin resistance maybe and then go back to how adipose tissue inflammation comes into play. Mm-hmm. So insulin resistance is, you know, generally defined as an inadequate response by those tissues that are sensitive to insulin, such as muscle, liver, or fat. So that defines their inability to respond to normal circulating level of insulin. And as a result of that, you have basically hyperglycemia potentially that could develop. And this is often associated with obesity. And why adipose tissue inflammation comes into play? Because recent research has shown that adipose tissue functions as an endocrine organ, which means that it's able to secrete substances such as hormones or cytokines, which would include inflammatory molecules. And once these hormones and inflammatory molecules are secreted, they can then reach through the circulation various tissues, distal tissues from fat, in addition to actin also within adipose tissue, and can modify their metabolism. So in insulin resistance, which is normally associated with obesity, which develops as a result of fat expansion or adipose tissue expansion, fat cell hypertrophy, increased fat cell size. And as fat cell size increases in obesity, these cells are characterized also by an inflammatory state, which means that they secrete inflammatory cytokines or molecules, and this is what constitutes adipose tissue inflammation. It's actually really the imbalanced secretion of pro-inflammatory versus anti-inflammatory molecules. So that means that fat in tissue in obesity secretes more molecules that promote inflammation and less molecules that actually decrease inflammation. And this is believed to be due to increased fat cell size that leads to attracting immune cells such as macrophages and lymphocytes into adipose tissue, and this all constitutes a hallmark of adipose tissue inflammation. To come back to insulin resistance, when obesity develops and adipose tissue inflammation is established as a result of that, fat now secretes these cytokines that cause inflammation, and as part of their effects, they affect tissues that are normally sensitive to insulin. For example, the muscle is known as the major glucose utilizing tissue in the body, and it's very important that it's able to take up and utilize glucose to maintain normal glycemia. That's just one of the mechanisms by which it improves glucose homeostasis. So when these inflammatory cytokines are secreted, they actually decrease the ability of muscle to take up glucose. And some of these cytokines include, for example, resistin, include interleukin-6, TNF-alpha. There are several cytokines that are secreted that promote inflammation. And they can prevent muscle or decrease the ability of muscle to take up glucose. In addition, they also increase the ability of liver to produce more glucose and decrease also the action of insulin, which all of this contributes to insulin resistance.
The The other part of your review looked at N3 fatty acids, so I think it's important that we also define what those are.
What the N3 fatty acids are. Fatty acids in general are long carbon chain fatty acids, and specifically the polyunsaturated fatty acids are characterized by having, two or more double bonds within those molecules. And within the polyunsaturated fatty acids, there are also two different categories, N3 fatty acids and N6 fatty acids. So the N3 fatty acids are characterized by, of course, this long carbon chain fatty acid by two or more double bonds. But the when you count the double bond, the last double bond from the methyl group, if it's in the third carbon from the methyl group, they are called N3 fatty acids. And if it is from the sixth carbon from the methyl group, it's called the N6 fatty acids. So you can have, two, three, or more unsaturated fatty acids from there. And, of course, the other end of the molecule is a carboxyl group. So this is a, just a general structure. Most of the time when people talk about N3 fatty acids, they are also called generally omega-3 fatty acids. Mm-hmm. The first thing that comes to mind are, fish oil or fatty acids of marine origins. But yeah, it's really a very heterogeneous family of molecules, because although they all have this double bond, from the last double bond from the methyl group, from the third carbon from the methyl end of the molecule, but they can have different length. That means 18, 20 carbons or more, and they can have different numbers of unsaturation of double bonds. So they could have 2, 3, 5 double bonds, and so they're all fit into the N3 fatty acids family.
In your review, you looked at studies that show diets containing these fatty acids improve adipose tissue inflammation and obesity. Can you explain the mechanisms or ways this is thought to work?
Okay. So there are several mechanisms, and I'm sure more will be discovered. Mm-hmm. So the fatty acids in general, the N3 fatty acids, are known to have anti-inflammatory properties, and they have been studied for a long time for that, because the prevent or they produce metabolites that are derived from them that are not inflammatory as compared to those metabolites derived from N6 fatty acids. So one mechanism that has been proposed is that the fatty acids are known to increase beta oxidation or fatty acid oxidation. And this is true in several tissues, not just adipose tissue, in muscle, and also in adipose tissue or in the liver. And this is mediated by some kinases that are known to promote fatty acid oxidation. So this would actually contribute to breakdown of fat, which I'm referring to as fat oxidation, and therefore that would decrease actually the adiposity or the amount of stored lipids within the adipose tissue. As a result of that, if you're decreasing the fat mass or the fat cell size, which is also one of the effects of the N3 fatty acids, to decrease fat cell size, we know that smaller fat cell size are less inflammatory or exhibit less adipose tissue inflammation than the larger adipocytes. So that's one potential mechanism. The other mechanism is through some metabolites that are derived from the N3 fatty acid, especially when I use N3 fatty acids, I'm referring to EPA and DHA. And these metabolites or molecules derived from EPA and DHA include are called the resolvins or protectins. And these have already known anti-inflammatory effects in other tissues. So you reduce inflammation through intermediates produced from the N3 fatty acids. There are also some new mechanisms that have been discovered or reported recently, and that include the ability of the N3 fatty acids to bind a receptor that is called GPR120, which has been also found to decrease inflammation by reducing the secretion of inflammatory molecules, those cytokines that are associated with adipose tissue inflammation. So these are some of the mechanisms that lead to that. And there is one other that I forgot, is that also N3 fatty acids are known to repress lipogenesis. They are able to reduce the activity of transcription factors, those proteins that normally activate lipid synthesizing genes. And in this case, in the presence of N3 fatty acids, there was a repression of those pathways that lead to lipogenesis and de novo fatty acid synthesis. So it could be one or more of these mechanisms that really contribute to adipose tissue, decreased adipose tissue inflammation. Another one that has been reported, actually, that has been even more known, because one of the well-established effects of N3 fatty acids is beneficial effects in cardiovascular disease by decreasing inflammation. And C-reactive protein is used as a marker of inflammation in cardiovascular disease. But we know that interleukin-6, which is pro-inflammatory cytokine produced by adipose tissue, is an activator of CRP, or induces or increases the production of CRP by the liver. So this could be another mechanism by which overall N3 decrease inflammation is by reducing the amount of interleukin-6 along with decreasing the secretion of other pro-inflammatory cytokines. And if IL-6 is secretion from adipose tissue is decreased, then you have less CRP that is decreased also. So overall, not only decrease adipose tissue inflammation, but also overall systemic inflammation.
Do you think that eating a diet then high in these N3 fatty acids could actually help improve the metabolism in obese people who have metabolic syndrome?
This is a really very interesting question, because this is the really the heart of all of this. You know, why we're doing all of this research is to see whether it is meaningful. And it's true that the studies that, you know, we're doing, or most of the studies that have been done in this area, have used animal models of diet-induced obesity or maybe genetic obesity. And it is clear, regardless of how you induce obesity, high fat, high sucrose, you are able to improve insulin sensitivity, decrease insulin resistance, and even adiposity in those models. It hasn't been studied as much in humans. So there are fewer studies in humans that have addressed whether N3 fatty acids can improve insulin resistance or metabolic syndrome in humans. And there are studies that have not found any effect. And, one can speculate on why many of them have not actually fed the fatty acids for a long time. I think that could be one contributing way. And also, it does not appear that N3 PUFA have actually any effect on inflammation or adipose tissue inflammation when obesity is not a confounding factor. So they seem to be more effective in the obese models. So to make the story short, we need more research to really establish this. And from the studies that have been published, there is a clear effect that N3 PUFA, decreases, hyperlipidemia, decreases inflammation, and may improve insulin sensitivity, but it's not, you know, very consistent. We need more study. What is out there is encouraging. There is no negative effect, I would say, but we need more studies really to look at that. And it needs to be done in the overweight, obese population that has insulin resistance, you know, metabolic syndrome.
Are there numbers on that group of obese people and how much of their diets actually consist of N3 fatty acids?
Overall, the I actually am not aware if there was specifically a report of the intake of N3 in the obese population, but overall, the intake of N3 fatty acids is low in the Western diet. The ratio, usually the ratio of the omega-6 to omega-3 fatty acids is too high. It's not where it should be compared to the maybe Asian intake. So overall, the intake is low.
And is the best way to increase that intake with fish?
Well, if you like fish, that's the best way. The best way is really through diet, not through supplements. However, supplements is an alternative. So the best way is really to work on including in your diet, you know, fish intake. And you can take just a, 5-ounce tuna can, and, you know, that provides you with 2 servings and easily a total of over 200 milligrams of EPA and DHA. So if you can eat tuna or other fish that is, you know, rich in N3, I think that would be the best way to do that. So we would recommend, since there is no evidence that, you know, this level of intake, even if DHA actually has, you know, recognized that 1 gram or maybe up to 2 grams of PUFA intake, you know, is considered safe. So I think I would say that we should encourage people to include more of these N3 fatty acids in the diet because they're already recognized to be beneficial to.
And there are no risks really in that.
Well, the risk is, you know, first of all, these are fats, so any time you increase your gram, your amount, your intake of fat, you know, so whether it's coming from into other source, that's total fat. So you need to be careful that you're not getting into high fat diet by including this. And levels that are again, you know, 0.5 gram of EPA, DHA, 1 gram, you know, is considered to be, you know, to be within the safe level. So there are no established really guidelines for that. What is the upper limit? So it's all based on what would be considered adequate intake, and based, you know, because there, I think the issue is the we don't have really any essential fatty acid deficiencies, and so based on that, you know, there are still ongoing discussions about whether we need to set adequate upper intake or, you know, specific recommendations. However, what I would say is if you want to increase your intake of N3 through supplements, you need to be careful there, and this is where, you know, there may be more risk than with just diet or fish, because the supplements, you need to be careful where they come from. Are they really pure fatty acids? Are they, you know, is it just oil that is in the capsules that that you're taking, in the pills, in the N3 supplements? Are there any impurities that may pose health risks? So we would, you know, look into that to make sure that whatever source of supplement you're using, if that's the route you choose, that, you know, it's not full of contaminants and it only has maybe 5% of really EPA and DHA, which could be the case. However, from the diet, on the other hand, you need to also to look at the source of fish itself to make sure that, you know, there are no issues of other types of contaminants.